Hi, this is Jonathan Kay for Blogging Heads TV. I'm managing editor for Comment for the National Post newspaper, and I am today speaking with John Moore, who is a radio host here in Toronto. John, how are you doing?
I'm good.
Okay, John, can you tell us a little bit about your station?
Sure. Newstalk 1010 is Canada's number one talk station. It's heard here in Toronto and on the internet at newstalk1010.com. Legendary station reaching back 80 years, but I always like to say that this is where the real conversation in Toronto is happening.
Okay, and we are at a moment when there are people in the United States and around the world who actually care what's going on in Toronto because of our mayor, Rob Ford, and drug scandals involving him, which have been publicized by Gawker.com, which is why we're here doing this broadcast. So now that we have the world's attention, let's explain a little bit about this great city and the mayor. So I'm going to ask you just to start off a little bit, tell people about Rob Ford, not so much how he got into politics, but maybe a little bit about who he appeals to, how he got elected in the first place. And then later we'll touch on the scandal that's now enveloping the city.
Sure. He's a complicated figure. He's been a city councilor. He was elected 2.5 years ago as the mayor of Toronto on what a lot of people described as a wave of anger. He's a guy who appeals to, I mean, one of the problems in Toronto, and I know there are a lot of cities in North America like this, is we were amalgamated. And so there were suburbanites who lived in towns that ran very well. And then there was downtown Toronto, which is very much like Manhattan. It's dense. It's heavily populated. There's a lot of money here. But there was a feeling in the outlying former cities that are now amalgamated with Toronto that they were being, you know, somehow abused, and that there's certain snobbiness in downtown Toronto. So a very populist figure, in some ways a bit of a Tea Party figure, sort of railing against government, believing government really doesn't have any business doing anything other than that which cannot be found in the Yellow Pages. And you know, there's also an aspect of anger, as I mentioned before, that these were people who felt disaffected and that the downtown elites were telling them what to do. So they said, fine, let's give them Rob Ford.
Okay, so Rob Ford, kind of what some people call a Tea Party guy. It's also worth mentioning that his predecessor, a guy by the name of David Miller, in some way answered to the stereotype of the downtown liberal, hybrid car driving, bike riding fellow who the Tea Party is rail against, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've written about this for you, John, in the National Post. I call it the snobbery of anti-snobbery, the idea that you're better than the elitists who think they're better than you because you're not an elitist. But yes, the previous mayor, I mean, everyone talked about his hair. He's very much a Jane Jacobs, Richard Florida type of guy who believes in the modern urban machine and in the idea that government can solve everything.
Okay, so we have Toronto, which is kind of Canada's Manhattan and San Francisco rolled into one. We have downtown snobs like you and me. And then we've got this mayor who is unapologetic about his suburban character and his everyman tastes. And how has that gotten him into trouble, even before this latest scandal? What are your some of your highlights that maybe you'd point out to people who are interested in Rob Ford?
Yeah. Well, Rob Ford's
top three.
Yeah, Rob Ford's been a gift to talk radio. I mean, it's been one scandal after another. And sometimes it's the small stuff, like he's allegedly reading his speech while driving himself, and he refuses to have a chauffeur, which, of course, endears him to his followers, but also means that he tries to work while driving. I mean, on a bigger level, obviously we have a story in the Toronto Star, and it's pretty well the Star that writes all of the critical stuff about the mayor. The idea that he was kicked out of a military gala because he was drunk. At the same gala, he was said to have it was a different gala, I think, that he was allegedly drunk and grabbed another mayoral candidate's butt. And then, of course, the latest thing is the idea that the mayor smokes crack, and that's what's put us on the map.
Okay, well, this is a crazy story, and of course, you know, Gawker.com, as I mentioned, has written about it. But you know, Toronto is Canada's biggest city. You know, so you're talking about a mayor who's, you know, it's the equivalent in Canadian terms of mayor of New York, this is a really lurid story. And, of course, it's all allegations because it hasn't been proven. But maybe you could tell the viewers a little bit about what exactly Rob Ford is alleged to have done.
Well, the story in the Toronto Star is very carefully written, obviously, because until the video is seen, we don't know. But I thought they approached it with a very journalistic attitude, and those who think that the Star is out to get Rob Ford will say that they just went for the story because it was going to undermine Rob Ford.
Now, the Toronto Star, we should point out, is a somewhat left-leaning paper.
Yeah.
And it has been had a vicious anti-Ford agenda from the beginning, you will acknowledge.
It has. But at the same time, they have a mandate, which is that they're supposed to be looking out for what's good for the city of Toronto. They sincerely believe that Rob Ford is bad for Toronto, and I'm with them on a lot of that. And so when something like this comes along, they'll throw their formidable investigative resources at it. Now, in this case, what it is a video, 90 seconds, purporting to show Rob Ford in a disoriented state, saying some disparaging things about the Federal Liberal Party leader, about the ethnic minority, the young African, or I should say Canadian, African-Canadian boys that he coaches on a team of generally underprivileged kids, and most importantly, perhaps smoking crack cocaine. The video hasn't been seen by anybody outside of the guy who's in charge of Gawker and the two reporters, but the way they approached it was to sit in the backseat of a car with a guy who's probably a drug dealer. Both of the reporters looked at the video three times, then they separated, made their notes, and both of them concluded that it was Rob Ford in the video.
So just to emphasize the circumstances here, I mean, it's something out of Hollywood, right? Because you have creatures from the drug world who, it sounds like they want to cash in on a video that they allege is of the mayor of Canada's biggest city smoking crack. And, of course, they won't let anybody have the video file, but they're showing it to people in the backseat of a car. And the amount of money they're asking for the actual confirmed video of this, it's in six figures, correct?
Yeah, and we don't know exactly what six figures. I mean, I've heard 100,000 quite a few times. It was shot to my radio station for 20,000. So far, nobody has paid for it. Some people have said, hey, the mayor is independently wealthy. You know, how come they never took it to him and said, you know, give us 20 grand or 50 grand and we'll just burn this tape? But yeah, it's, I think that's what amazes Torontonians in many ways. We used to be called New York run by the Swiss. This is a fairly unassuming city in spite of its metropolis status. And the idea that our mayor might be involved in something like this, and the reporters are sitting in the backseat of a car with known drug dealers looking at video of the mayor putting a lighter underneath a glass pipe. I mean, it's mind-boggling.
Now, John, you're left of center. You self-identify as progressive.
Yeah.
But on your radio show, a lot of your callers are right of center. I'd maybe classify them, as many of them, as populist, but you might classify them differently. There are people who are defending the mayor. What's the logic they use when they defend the mayor?
They love the mayor. I compare it to Hugo Chavez, or even, I mean, you know, I'm going to get it for this, but Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, and I don't mean that means he's a crazed anti-Semite. I mean that Rob Ford, Chavez, Ahmadinejad, and other populist leaders are seen as revenge by some people who feel disenfranchised against those they feel have disenfranchised them. And, you know, Rob Ford, if your mayor calls you back because a city sewer overflowed in your basement, you feel pretty good about that mayor. And that's why Rob Ford has his ardent defenders to the point where they're, I sort of, it's like the Dan Rather Bush memos. I mean, even if this video comes out, there will be people who will say, no, you can see the seam where they attached his head. And, you know, people will simply not buy into this.
So you'll get Rob Ford truthers is what you're telling me.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Should we be plugging your book on that instead?
Actually, I am the author of a book called Among the Truthers. Came out a couple years ago. Blogging Heads TV was very kind to help publicize it. But we'll go beyond that because this is about Rob Ford. And has it been surreal for you as a broadcast media figure? I mean, again, Toronto's supposed to be the sophisticated city, the city run by the Swiss, according to the popular adage. I mean, on one hand, you have this terrible personal tragedy in this guy's life that's apparently, allegedly playing out, both not just with drugs, but with alcohol, and he's sort of a rageaholic. On the other hand, there's something almost bizarrely surreal about the whole thing. How are Canadian media personalities handling this, the mixture of the tragic and the surreal?
Well, it depends on the personality, obviously. I mean, I self-identify as, you know, centrist left of center. So, you know, in theory, I should be gleeful about this, but I'm not. For many reasons. One of them being that Rob Ford's fans, probably about 80% of my listenership is much more conservative than I am. So I've tried to approach it with fairness. But it is, I mean, it's crazy. It's not about, you know, your mayor supports policy A and it's a vivid debate and we're, you know, some people don't agree with him. I mean, this is about a mayor who is frequently humiliated on a now international stage. So it's a mixed blessing, honestly, for talk radio. I mean, it's just gold, and it has been since the day he was elected. He has a show on our station, so he's on Sunday, and then on Monday morning I get a playback tape of Rob Ford, and, you know, it's guaranteed good fun. But I just, Corey, you're right. It's a personal tragedy.
Let me repeat this for people watching, because it is an odd situation. That you obviously talk about Rob Ford because it's a big news subject, but Rob Ford himself, the mayor of Toronto, also has a show on your station. But that show, the weekly episode of that show was canceled this past weekend, correct?
Yes. He's on our station, News Talk 1010, from 1 to 3 p.m. And to be perfectly honest, I have to be proud of everything on my radio station, but it sounds like small-town community radio. It often involves great long lists of community announcements and then calls from friends of the mayor who tell him what a great guy he is. But he inevitably, because he speaks from the hip, and I think it's important for people who don't know Rob Ford to understand, this is not about a guy who is like Chris Christie, who offends people because he's so common sense and because he dares go toe-to-toe with the establishment and the elites. Chris Christie makes sense. Chris Christie is a worthy candidate for presidency of the United States. Rob Ford consistently reminds me of, and this is where my family's from, south of the Mason-Dixon line, 1950s, kind of state governor or county official racing around in a souped-up Pontiac with police lights on top. When he speaks, it is to everyone's astonishment whatever he says. So on a weekly basis, he does that, but this week he recused himself.
Why do Canadians, or maybe just Torontonians, why do we have so much lower standards for municipal politicians than we do for politicians at another level? Because we should point out that the members of parliament and the members of the provincial legislature that we elect often are eminent citizens and not in this mold at all. What is it about city politics that sends people to such populist extremes?
I really don't know. I wish I had an answer, because I wish we have one great mayor, I think, in Canada. I mean, actually, I've talked to a lot of the smaller town mayors who I think are tremendous. You know, there's a flood in northern Ontario, and I'll call the local mayor of a community of 10,000. I'll think, this guy really knows what he's doing. We have Nahed Nenshi in Calgary, who I think is tremendous. But, you know, Toronto yearns for a Mayor Bloomberg or Rahm Emanuel. And for whatever reason, we've had our share of I mean, honestly, it's sending the clowns.
Okay, let me switch to the national stage. I think most people, even Americans, will have heard of Pierre Trudeau, who was Canada's prime minister for a long time. And maybe some of them haven't heard that his son, Justin Trudeau, is now leading a major Canadian political party, the Liberal Party, which I guess you could say is roughly equivalent to the Democrats in the United States. Again, by American standards, I mean, would you compare, is there any way you could compare this to any sort of American political dynasty? Is this the Canadian version of the Kennedys, this ascension of Justin Trudeau, the son of Pierre Trudeau?
You know what? I think that would actually be a fair comparison in some respects, except, of course, the Kennedys. I mean, you know, you could go up to dozens of Kennedys who have been in respected public service and even the in-laws like Sergeant Shriver. But the comparison that is fair, I think, is this would be like John F. Kennedy Jr., because Justin is a very good-looking guy. He's actually young to be aspiring to be the Prime Minister of Canada. And the resume
is... How old is he? He's at 40s, or young, early 40s.
He's like 42 now.
Okay.
Although it's worth pointing out, he's the same age as the current Prime Minister was when he took over the party that he eventually took to government.
Stephen Harper.
Yeah. But Justin is... I'm a fan of Justin only for his stick-to-itiveness. I mean, he just sort of rolls with it, and he doesn't get angry at the stuff that is leveled at him. And currently, our federal government is screwing things up. He doesn't have to do anything. But I can see why a lot of people feel that he's unworthy to aspire to be the Prime Minister.
Now, as you said, a lot of people focus on this fact. Justin Trudeau is a very good-looking guy. He's charismatic, comes from Quebec, and, of course, in Canada, our political dynamic with English and French, he's fluent in both languages. So he's a very attractive political candidate. Do you see this guy as someone who, if he eventually becomes prime minister, that he could actually become a figure on the international stage on the scale of some British prime ministers and even some American presidents?
Yeah. Hard to say, to be perfectly honest. And I guess what I'm telling you is that I've had a pretty good record of being able to make political predictions, but that's because I work with the material I got. With Justin, it's hard to say. I would say that the likelihood of him becoming the prime minister of Canada is not bad. I mean, this is a government that's kind of running out of gas. It's in the midst of a bit of scandal right now. And Justin, in spite of the predictions and the government's own words, or the Conservative Party's own words, I should say, they say he's in over his head. So far, in his very young leadership, he hasn't screwed it up.
Let's talk a little bit about the political dynamic, because you've talked a little bit about the ads that Stephen Harper's Conservative government have leveled against Justin Trudeau. Now, Conservatives is a relative term in Canada. You know, we, Conservative or not, we still have a universal health care system. It's still Canada, this generous safety net. But the last couple of years have witnessed a swing toward the right in Canadian foreign policy, to a certain extent, more limited extent, in fiscal policy. And, you know, this has been noted in Washington. It's been appreciated. Do you think that that's just sort of an interregnum, and that Canada's about to swing back left, more like sort of a Scandinavian country? Or do you think that Americans can count on Canada being a more American-style military ally on their continent for years to come?
Yeah, I'm convinced, and you and I have talked about this quite a lot, that Canada hasn't fundamentally changed, that the Conservative government has tried to nudge Canada, but I think they're up against the wall of where the population wants to go. And when you look at surveys, it establishes that Canadians have not been becoming more conservative. And in some respects, they're actually kind of uncomfortable. I mean, just a quick example, this government has tried to hang its hat on the War of 1812 and the 200th anniversary of the War of 1812. And when Canadians were asked about that, they said they weren't interested. They were much more interested in the anniversary of the Charter of Rights, which is a liberal treasure. They were much more militarily interested in our role as peacekeepers. So my theory has been this, and I know I've argued with, for example, Darrell Bricker is a prominent pollster, and he wrote a book where he said Canada is fundamentally becoming more conservative. I don't think it is. And I think Justin Trudeau is going to be able to evoke a lot of themes, and they may be unrealistic themes. Canadians much, you know, they're kind of like a guy on the internet who's 6'2" and blonde and 48 when he's actually 60 and paunchy. Canadians have a vision of themselves, and I don't think that the Conservatives have changed that, and I think Justin is going to be able to sing a tune that Canadians are going to identify with better than the one the Conservatives have tried to push them into.
Okay, fair enough. Let's talk a little bit about the Canadian Senate, which has had its own scandal.
The scandal that it exists really is enough for me.
Yeah, and actually I think this might be of interest to people from outside Canada, because when people hear the term Senate, I think they think of the American Senate, which arguably is the most important legislature on the face of the planet. The Canadian Senate, I think, answers to a very different description. Maybe could you tell Blogginghead's viewers the powers of the Canadian Senate and the sort of personalities who are named to the Senate?
Well, I mean, the American Senate was created, obviously, in order to provide representation. If you were from a very small state, that you would have a bigger say, even though you didn't have it in Congress. And I think that was the vision of the Canadian Senate as well. But honestly, the Canadian Senate is, it's called the Chamber of Sober Second Thought. And they do good work. You know, sometimes stuff comes from the Commons, and very smart people sitting in the Senate sit on committee and say, we could tweak this and tweak that. But generally, it's a repository of patronage appointments. And increasingly, it seems, unworthy patronage appointments. And, you know, I'm one of those people who does not believe we need the Senate, and I don't think it would be missed if it was gone.
Can you tell us a little bit about Mike Duffy? And I'll just set out the facts here a little bit. One of the people who was named to the Senate in the last few years, his name is Mike Duffy. He used to be a television broadcaster and political analyst. Sort of a very friendly, sociable fellow, has made a lot of contacts in politics and the media. And he got himself into a spending scandal involving basically claiming housing expenses that were later deemed to be improper. And he might, in fact, eventually be criminally investigated. Do you get the sense from your listeners on your radio show that this has woken people up to the fact that there are people in the Senate, one of the two chambers of Parliament, who are much less august than maybe the Senate was originally designed for?
Oh, yeah, and it's not just Mike Duffy. I mean, there's another guy, Brazo, Patrick Brazo, who, you know, the prime minister probably thought it was Christmas the day he appointed Patrick Brazo, young, good-looking, hard-bodied, native Indian Canadian. And so the conservatives could say, look at us, we put a native in the Senate. Well, Brazo has turned out to be horribly inappropriate. He's currently up under suspicion of criminal assault. Mike Duffy is kind of a conservative hack, to be perfectly honest. He was a journalist. But then all of a sudden he went from being the kind of guy who's supposed to keep the government honest to being their most successful fundraiser because he's a good storyteller and he's quite avuncular. But Mike Duffy fulfills that old theory or maxim that you become what you hate, and he has become just a tremendous, you know, he's sucking on the public teat. It's absolutely repulsive. And the fact that the Prime Minister's chief of staff in this spending scandal, which is entirely on the doorstep of Mike Duffy, that the Prime Minister's chief of staff had to resign, but Mike Duffy still sits in the Senate, is scandalous.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the circumstances there, because just to flesh out the scandal a little bit, you had this guy, Mike Duffy, claiming inappropriate expenses, and then he was forced to pay back those expenses. Yeah. And of course, this isn't exactly Benghazi we're talking about. This is basically just a guy.
Even Benghazi's not Benghazi, but you know.
Putting that aside, even if you take the allegations at the face, it basically just involves taking more money in housing expenses than you're due, and then was asked to pay it back. Apparently didn't have the money to pay it back, and then the Prime Minister's own chief of staff, and this is the equivalent of a White House, a senior White House aide in American terms, writes a personal check to him for $90,000 so he could pay it back and essentially hush up the controversy. How extraordinary is that, that the chief of staff would think that that's an appropriate thing to do? I know of no equivalent of that in American politics. Have you ever seen anything like that in Canadian politics?
No, I don't think so. I mean, honestly, though, Jonathan, I'm one of those guys who thinks that, I mean, I think Mike Duffy has behaved terribly in all of this, but I honestly think the Prime Minister's chief of staff is a man who's independently wealthy and thought, Mike Duffy's an old friend, he's done a lot for this party, I'm going to write a $90,000 check and bail him out. And somehow he didn't remember sort of the royal we. Wait a second, I represent the Prime Minister in all of this. So it's scandalous and banal at the same time, because I really think that he was just trying to help Mike Duffy out. But the optics of it, I mean, even a conservative base is saying, what were you thinking?
Are there, how many, there's roughly 100 people in the Canadian Senate, because some of the seats go unfilled for a period, but how many of those people are other Mike Duffys in waiting, which is to say just people who are in the Senate to have a sash and a meal ticket? And by your estimation, how many actually do good work and are the sort of people that Canadians would want in the Senate?
Yeah. You know what? I haven't spent a lot of time in the Senate. I would estimate that perhaps half of the people in there are doing good work, and some of them do very good committee work, and, you know, I think really, really care about their jobs. Let's put it this way. I think an awful lot of people in the Canadian Senate are there to collect a fat salary and a good title, and especially a title that gets them an excellent restaurant table if they tell somebody in the States that they're a senator. But I don't believe they're up to the level I have to lawyer myself, of misrepresentation that the likes of Mike Duffy are up to. I'd say there's probably maybe a dozen who warrant some serious scrutiny and perhaps should be shamed out of office.
Okay, one last question before we go. The last couple of years, we've seen a lot of claims in the Canadian media that the tenor of political dialogue in this country has changed, and it's become harsher, and it's become more U.S. style. And of course, U.S. style is sort of a term of invective here in Canada, in political circles at least. We have more attack ads. You have a baser level of political dialogue. Do you see evidence of that? Do you turn on the TV and see political ads and see the influence of professional American campaign managers in Canadian politics?
I see people trying to push it that way, but I don't think Canadians are buying it. And, you know, I mean, look at the national newspaper of record for conservatives would be, you know, your newspaper, the National Post, for which I also write. But you guys are sensible. And when when there's a screw up at the prime ministerial level, you guys don't try to figure out how to bail the prime minister and the conservatives out. You try to figure out how to keep them honest. And I think that's the difference. There is a level of mendacity and manipulation in the United States that is appalling. And in talk radio, honestly, and some television stations, they're just an arm of the Republican Party, and they float the most ridiculous talking points and bogus polls, and they edit what people say, and it's vile. I think Canadians have a sense of fair play where every time you try to pull that, In my case, on talk radio, somebody will call up and I'll put them on the air and they say, John, I can't believe you just said that. And then, you know, you're caught dead to rights and you can't get away with it. In the States, you just hang up on that person.
So we're going to maybe we have Americans watching a show about Canada. Let's finish off with we Canadians talking about America. What's the one story or two stories you've seen in the United States media and politics the last couple of months that as a Canadian, it just leaves you shaking your head? I can't believe they're making a scandal out of that.
Well, I have to say there's three scandals around Barack Obama right now, and every single one of them is worse than Watergate. And there's a proportionality. I've been saying this on my show about the current problem with Senator Duffy. I mean, it's scandalous, but I don't think the Prime Minister needs to resign, and I don't think anybody needs to start picketing in the streets. And that I find amazing in the States where, you know, the Republicans refuse to do anything to help Barack Obama, even if he's doing the right thing. And this elevation of Benghazi, the IRS, and the AP story, all of them, each in their own way, have things to object to, but they do not, some of the ridiculousness that has been written about this being sort of absolutely the worst, well, it's been said in so many words, the worst scandal in the history of the United States. That's preposterous.
Okay. Thank you very much, John. I appreciate your time and your insights.
My pleasure. Good to talk with you.
And for Blogging Heads TV, this is Jonathan Kay signing out.